It's the official Christmas holiday today. It's also the last day of Hanukkah and the first day of Kwanzaa. Happy holidays to you. 2022 has been a momentous year in the world. There's Russia's invasion of Ukraine, of course, and we're looking at that continuing story from a few angles this week. But let's reflect on some of the other major global news for the next few minutes. The year brought massive protests in Iran, the death of a Palestinian-American journalist, and a potential peace deal signed in Ethiopia. With us to talk about that and more is Jen Williams. She's deputy editor at Foreign Policy. Jen, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with Iran. So for months, anti-regime demonstrators have taken to the streets after the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini. And now we're hearing reports of a brutal crackdown and execution of protesters. Tell us, Jen, what are the protesters asking for, and tell us about the headway they've made.
So, you know, like you said, it started very basically about the treatment of Mahsa Amini by the so-called morality police. These are special kind of Department of Police officers who go around policing women's dress primarily. And she was apparently not wearing hijab properly, according to them, was taken into custody and died. And so since those protests started, it has since evolved far beyond the issue of hijab, compulsory hijab for women in Iran, and has really extended to full-on calling for the downfall of the Islamic Republic, of the Islamic regime, of the Ayatollah, and really calling for a complete overhaul. We saw protesters holding up flags that were pre the Islamic Revolution, really, you know, calling for a time that is before the revolution. Their specific asks, what people actually want in practice to replace that, is much less clear. In terms of what they've achieved, not much so far beyond a lot of attention internationally. We did hear some rumors that the government might have sort of disbanded the morality police, although it's really unclear whether that actually happened or whether that was a misunderstanding. It doesn't seem like the regime is going to fall anytime soon. They are certainly not stepping down. They have made some lip service saying, you know, that they are going to stop, you know, not be quite as strict in policing hijab, et cetera.
Yeah, the protests continue. They're just massive and they're across all sectors of Iranian society, which has just been so fascinating and inspiring to watch. Let's move to Haiti, because we've been covering throughout the year a deteriorating situation there, gangs becoming more powerful, cholera is back, many Haitians looking to leave, and amidst it all, the United States is still deporting Haitians back to the country. And this is as U.S. intervention is once again being contemplated. Jen, is there a consensus on what, if anything, Western powers should or should not be doing vis-a-vis Haiti?
There is, according to the State Department, quote, a broad international consensus regarding the need to promote improved security conditions. And that is about as specific as they will get. Mm. So no, there is a consensus that something needs to be done, but nobody wants to do a full-scale single government intervention. The United States, the Biden administration, has actually asked Canada to try to take the lead on this. So Canada, they're actually working with the police to try to help the Haitian National Police and sending some police vehicles. They've done two fact-finding missions, but they are also saying they are not going to do an actual intervention. So nobody seems to want to actually do an intervention. It seems more that it's going to be some kind of behind-the-scenes security assistance type things of trying to bolster the police. But nobody seems to want to actually invade or anything like that.
Got it. Let's move to a public health story. China has reversed many zero COVID policies after widespread protests. And this comes just after President Xi Jinping further consolidated his power at a recent party congress. What are you hearing out of China now about the pandemic? And what do you think we can expect next year?
It seems like the Chinese government has completely taken all of the guardrails off. They have basically done a full 180 from zero COVID to now all COVID all the time. They've gotten rid of most of the restrictions, mass testing, mandatory government quarantine, things like that. And what we're hearing is very worrisome out of China. You know, it's all kind of anecdotal. And on social media, people saying that COVID is basically everywhere. The government is not being particularly forthcoming or, I would say, honest about actual numbers or death tolls. They're not even testing the way they used to anymore. So there's a huge concern that there's going to be massive deaths. One prediction up to 2.1 million.
Wow. That's huge and really worrying. So why the about face on the part of the Chinese government?
Several reasons. One is economic. The massive lockdowns, the lockdowns over and over again of major cities, Shanghai, Beijing, caused massive economic toll on China's economy and on the global economy. And then you had the protests that started at the end of November against the COVID restrictions. So put those together and you had the government basically saying, all right, we've got to end this policy.
Okay, let's turn to Afghanistan, where there is hunger among huge swaths of the population. This in the wake of the US withdrawal over a year ago. Why have these deadly conditions persisted?
Yeah, more than 90% of Afghans don't have enough food to eat. And there are several reasons. The biggest first one is that when the Taliban took over in 2021, international community, including the U.S., basically cut off all assistance. So donor governments, NGOs, the International Monetary Fund, et cetera. That sent the country's economy into a tailspin, left a lot of Afghans without jobs. Then you had drought. And a couple other kind of issues with the harvest, rising fuel and fertilizer costs that made the harvest much lower than expected yield. Then you have aid organizations in a tougher spot in terms of funding due to rising food and energy costs. So put all of that together and you basically have a perfect storm.
I mean, 90% of the country being hungry, that is going to ripple into neighboring countries and globally, right?
Absolutely. And just to put a kind of finer point on it, Afghans are, there are reports of they're giving their hungry children medicine to sedate them because they're so hungry. Some are selling their daughters and even their organs to survive. It is truly horrific. Millions of people are just a step away from famine. So going into the winter and as it gets colder, it's going to get just worse.
Okay, let's turn to Sri Lanka, where, you know, we saw protests, people running through major government buildings and the presidential palace. It was the cause of former President Gotabaya Rajapaksa resigning. Update us on the dire economic landscape in Sri Lanka that led to the protests.
Right. So economic mismanagement, taking on big foreign debt, the government of Sri Lanka, the Rajapaksas. And then when you had the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, the end of tourism for several years, because of that, you end up in a situation where Sri Lanka is effectively bankrupt. They don't have money to pay back their loans. They don't have dollars for essential imports, including like food, fuel, fertilizer, and medicine. So that's what basically caused these kind of protests to erupt. As you said, we saw the downfall of Gotabaya Rajapaksa. We now have President Ranil Wickremesinghe, who is elected by a parliamentary vote to replace him, see out his term. He's pledged to restore the economy, but there are really big, tough economic reforms that are needed. And it looks like the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, is not actually, by the end of the year, going to formally approve this big bailout. So they're still in a really tough situation.
Let's take a moment to talk briefly about press freedom, Jen. Multiple news outlets in the United Nations concluded that the esteemed Al Jazeera journalist, Palestinian-American Shireen Abu Akleh, was shot and killed by Israeli forces in the Jenin refugee camp. What's the latest on her case?
So the latest, as far as we know, so Palestinian officials and Abu Akleh's family and Al Jazeera have all accused Israel of doing this intentionally. Israel has acknowledged that it was Israeli fire that probably killed her, but they deny that it was intentional. The U.S. Department of Justice has now launched an investigation. That's basically the latest.
And Jen, when we asked you what stories we should cover, you brought up the peace deal between Ethiopia and forces in the northern Tigray region, where war broke out in November 2020 that led to a brutal civil war. A peace deal was signed, but questions remain. Do you think it will hold?
I really hope it does. There's a lot that still needs to be done. The economy and the country basically needs to be rebuilt in entire sections of the country. There's a lot of still happening to civilians being killed, abducted. Other services still are suspended. Aid still needs to get in there. But it seems to be holding for now, and I'll take that as good news.
Okay, well, after all of that, I want to just throw in a little hopeful note. The status of humpback whales. Counters spotted nearly 400 humpbacks in the Salish Sea off the western coast of Canada. That's more than any other recorded year, the Vancouver Island Free Daily reports. And the global humpback whale was once designated as an endangered species. But as the whale population increases, they have been downgraded into just a threatened category. So that means more beautiful breaches and songs. And we've been talking with Jen Williams, Deputy Editor at Foreign Policy. Jen, thank you so much.
Thank you.